HPPodcraft.com.
This matter began, as far as I am concerned, with the reading of a notice in the obituary section of the Gentleman's Magazine for an early year in the 19th century. On February 26th, at his residence in the Cathedral Close of Barchester, the Venerable John Benwell Haynes, D.D., aged 57, Archdeacon of Sowerbridge and Rector of Pickhill and Candley. The final paragraph, after informing us that Dr. Haynes died a bachelor, says, "It might have been augured that an existence so placid and benevolent would have been terminated in a ripe old age by a dissolution equally gradual and calm. But how unsearchable are the workings of Providence. The peaceful and retired seclusion amid which the honoured evening of Dr. Haynes' life was mellowing to its close was destined to be disturbed, nay, shattered, by a tragedy as appalling as it was unexpected."
That was an excerpt from the M.R. James story, The Stalls of Barchester Cathedral. Mr. M.R. James, see how he did that? Mr. M.R. James?
It's not Mr. James. We've been there before.
He was well-liked by H.P. Lovecraft, and that is why we are talking about him here on the H.P. Lovecraft Literary Podcast.
We are at HPPodcraft.com. My name is Chad Pfeiffer.
And my name is Chris Slackey.
Hey, who was that reader that we heard at the top?
Why are you asking? It's Greg Johnson.
I knew it.
He's amazing. He's talented. He's sensual.
His video of Lunge Dolphin's Christmas film picks, I hope people have been checking out. I've watched it a few times and chuckled mightily at it.
Yeah, it's worth watching more than once.
People should go check out all the videos he's got on his channel because he's always churning out good content, including that content we heard at the top. So thanks, Greg.
Thank you, Greg. It is the most wonderful time of the year. The solstice. As we record this, it is, for me, the darkest night of the year, the 21st.
Yeah, better get the dwelling prepared for that because lots of creeps come out. They got lots of darkness to play with.
What you got plans for Christmas?
I honestly don't have any real plans, just kind of hoping to break up the monotony a bit and relax a little over the next week. How about you?
Yeah, well, mostly with the family, my little ones. We're going to go over to my wife's extended family and spend time with them.
There's no reason not to have a nice ending to it. As rotten as it's been in places, I have certainly enjoyed a lot of the material we got to read this year.
Me too.
The Human Chair really stands out to me because it was recent.
Yeah.
But also a cool story. I liked Oh Ugly Bird.
Oh, yeah, that was great.
I liked that Monster of Lake Lemaitre story where there was the brain swapping with a dinosaur. Yeah. Might have actually been my favorite all year just because it was so crazy. But I recommended Slime to a lot of people.
Oh, yeah, that was fun.
Saying, hey, you want to see what the inspiration for The Blob was? Check that story out. Really liked The Refugee, which was that werewolf story, right? The lady. Those were really good ones. Carmilla, I loved.
Yeah.
Of One Blood. All great stuff. So that was all really good. And next year, I think we're going to kick it off, pretty sure, with Little Fritz Lieber.
Oh, whoa, really?
We have to see what stories are available. But yeah, we haven't read him yet. And he's important to Lovecraftianism. So
yes, he is.
But right now, we're still in the bathroom.
Yeah.
In the stalls of Barchester Cathedral. This is an M.R. James story. So, of course, it's a ghost story.
Yeah.
Let's get into it.
Dr. Haynes was the Archdeacon of the Cathedral of Barchester, and he's died. His painfully long and tedious obituary, we don't actually find out how he died, not yet at least. The narrator is going to go into how he found out about Dr. Haynes.
For the obituary, we just had Greg read a couple of little sections of it, because it goes on forever.
It goes on forever.
And it describes him as a really great guy. He's very temperate, very dedicated to being the archdeacon. Of course, obituaries rarely talk smack about the deceased.
Of course.
So it's not that rare for it to be glowing. But this just goes on and on.
And on.
I felt like they could have at least varied it up with some minor negatives, you know. He promised his friend Jeff he'd burn him a CD with all the old Floyd albums. Never did it. You know, nothing damning, but just a little bit of variation.
Yeah.
One important sentence that's hiding in that obituary. He succeeded to the archdeaconry upon the sudden decease of Archdeacon Pulteney in 1810. This Archdeacon Pulteney also died suddenly, or died in an unexpected way.
Yeah.
But the narrator cuts the obituary off just before the obituary describes what actually happened. Right. It says, the morning of the 26th of February, and then the narrator cuts in, says, perhaps I shall do better to keep back the remainder of the narrative until I have told the circumstances which led up to it. And he says he'd read the obituary with a bunch of others and thought, you know, if I ever have an opportunity of examining the local records of the period indicated, I'll try to remember this Dr. Haynes, which seems kind of weird why this particular obituary would stand out to him, but we're going to find out. And it leads to this Call of Cthulhu moment here, where things connect via a stray bit of information.
He was cataloging some manuscripts in the library of the college that he works. When looking into where he should catalog what stuff, he found this tin box labeled Papers of Archdeacon Haynes. He remembered reading the obit about Haynes and that he died under strange circumstances.
Right. And I guess the ending of the obituary that he's withholding, the description of those strange circumstances, that's what's stuck in his mind. But we just don't know what that is yet.
The librarian said, go ahead, take the box. You can look at its contents because, you know, he's a guy that works there and they trust him with it. So he's going to do a little Call Cthulhuan investigation type stuff.
Right. And people haven't looked at the box. This is really odd. The librarian says, I'm pretty sure that box is the one that our old master once said ought never to have been accepted by the college. And he said also that as long as he had control over the library, it should never be open. Basically, the old librarian kept it away from everybody.
Yeah.
When that librarian passed away, it went back to the family who didn't know what to do with it. So then they returned it again to the library. And nobody's opened it since. Very mysterious box. I was hoping there'd be some kind of monster hand in there.
Yeah.
Or like an amulet that shows you outer space or freaking lozenges that turn people into giant crabs. I don't care. I just wanted something spectacular to happen. But given that it's an M.R. James story.
You're getting nothing spectacular. The box contains some journals and letters.
Yeah.
A lot of talking about the Barchester Cathedral. And the place is very cool looking, super gothic. There's always some Susie and the Banshees playing and some kids doing, you know, pick up the penny dance.
It's very, it's the dream goth club. Yeah.
In a house across from the cathedral, Dr. Haynes lived with his sister, and that was in 1810. At that point, Haynes is not yet the archdeacon.
He gets the house when he becomes the archdeacon.
Right.
Like, it's the archdeacon's house. It's right across from the cathedral. And he used to be lived in by his predecessor, Archdeacon Pultaney. Pultaney!
Yeah, I know, the Jawas love that guy.
Dr. Haynes had wanted to be the archdeacon for a long time. This is crucial to the story.
Uh-huh.
But Pultaney was just getting older and older, and at 92, still showing no signs of letting up. He's going to hold on to that job.
Yeah.
So it's the incident that's about to be described that allows Haynes to then move into the house.
But Dr. Haynes comes home to see his sister. She's very upset, and she tells him that the archdeacon fell down the stairs and died. And they think it might have been due to some screwy step that needed repairs.
And Dr. Haynes wonders if there had been a seizure that caused this, but his sister puts the blame on a servant. When he says, had there been a seizure, she says, they don't think so, and that is almost the worst thing about it. It seems to have been all the fault of that stupid maid of theirs, Jane. There was a stair rod missing, and she never mentioned it, and the poor archdeacon set his foot quite on the edge of the step. You know how slippery that oak is. And it seems he must have fallen almost the whole flight and broken his neck. So sad for poor Miss Pultaney. Of course, they will get rid of the girl at once. I never liked her. So they're blaming it on this ditzy maid who does get dismissed. The stair rod is that metal bar that holds the carpeting down on steps.
Mm-hmm.
The accident, it seems like it was found later underneath the carpet. So it was just like carelessness. Instead of sliding it over the carpet, it went underneath.
Yeah.
He slipped on the carpet. That's why he fell. An accident around the house. That's the way a lot of people die. And in fact, that's the way most archdeacons go. So to everybody, that wouldn't have been that big of a deal. I was reading about this, and we think it's funny now, but the banana peel almost single-handedly destroyed the church in the 1700s. That's how many archdeacons. No, I don't think that's true. But it's not. Nobody finds it too remarkable that he slipped and fell and died. I mean, he is 92.
After that guy died, Haynes becomes the new archdeacon.
Right. So that's 1910 when he moves.
Supposedly, Pultaney was a pretty crappy archdeacon, and Haynes had to do a lot of house cleaning to get everything into shape. So it takes him about 3 years to get the cathedral in proper running order.
And people all kind of knew that the old guy was a disaster. In the journal that our narrator's looking at, there's a note from a friend to Haynes that says, now, thanks to a negligent maid and a loose stair carpet, there is some prospect that necessary business will be transacted without a complete loss alike of voice and temper. So it's kind of a mean thing to write, but he's like, thank goodness that maid screwed up. Now things are going to be in order. People aren't too upset about the switch. They like Dr. Haynes. He's got a good binder system, lots of labels. He executes this 3-year filing system and it all works out. It's incredible. After those 3 years, he's able to think about other things and he gets a lot more interested in the cathedral itself.
There is a draft of a letter to Sylvanus Urban, this is what he says, which I do not think was ever sent, describing the stalls in the choir. As I have said, these were of fairly late date, about the year 1700, in fact. And he talks about the stalls ornately carved, and there are these carved statues as well that are grotesque in nature, and one of them is a cat. an exquisitely modeled figure of a cat whose crouching posture suggests with admirable spirit the suppleness, vigilance, and craft of a redoubted adversary of the genus moose or mouse.
Well, specifically, this figure of the cat and two other statuettes are carved into the archdeacon's stall.
Yeah.
He's describing all the choir, but then he's saying, all right, in my stall, there's these weird figures, and that's the stall he's got to occupy during services. Opposite to the cat, the other figure is a monarch of some unearthly type that is seated on a throne. And he's wearing robes, but you can see that he's demonic. He's got horns, Vulcan ears, you know, this pointed ears. he's got talons on his hand. Between these two, there's another statue, and it's this monk-type figure. And the rent flesh on his cheekbones reveal him to be the king of terrors, is what it says in the story, which I believe is a biblical expression for death. Mm. It's got a knot, and that's further proofed, I think, because it's got a knotted cord. Seems to be holding up its robe, but actually it's a noose, as if it's preparing to hang somebody.
Yeah.
So you've got the cat, you've got the king demon, and you've got death itself. Those are the carvings on this archdeacon's stall, so pretty unique.
They were made by a Dutch artist who carved them out of a tree known as the hanging oak, called so because a bunch of human bones were found in the ground beneath it.
Right, but you got snowed because they are said to have been made by Dutch artists.
Oh, right.
Actually, in the notes in the journal that Hayes has written, he says he knows that that's actually not the case. He writes, some late researchers among the chapter accounts have shown me that the carving of the stalls was not, as was very usually reported, the work of Dutch artists, but was executed by a native of this city or district named Austin. So people say it was the work of Dutch artists, but it's actually this guy Austin, who's a local. Carved them out of that hanging oak wood. And for the people in the town where the hanging oak wood was taken, this was an important tree. It was the custom for those who wished to secure a successful issue to their affairs, whether of love or the ordinary business of life, to suspend from its boughs small images or puppets rudely fashioned of straw, twigs, or the like rustic materials. The bones and the soil around the tree suggest that it was once used to hang folks, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And then people began to imbue it with some kind of supernatural power. They believed that there was something more to it.
Right.
And it was out of that tree this stall was made with these crazy carved figures.
Now we get into his diary, which is pretty personal, and it shows that he starts off well, but things get worse for him over time. Mm-hmm. On September 15th, his sister, Letitia, has taken ill and left for warmer weather down by Brighton.
And he's got a pretty lonely existence without her. This is all kind of in the journal after those 3 years when he was very busy. But now that he's working on his own affairs, it's tough to pass the days. You know, you can only work so long. And then at night now, especially with her gone, he's just coming home alone.
So November 17th, and this part's pretty cool, he's falling asleep during a church service.
Yeah. At the prayer desk in the stall.
His hand is resting on the cat statue, and just as he's about to fall asleep, it feels like real fur, and then it moves around as if to bite him, and he jerks his hand back and wakes up. But it's just the wooden cat. Nothing moved. It was one of those experiences where I've had those where you kind of start to drift off to sleep, but you're not quite asleep, and then you realize you actually are asleep. Like, I've been walking somewhere, I'm thinking about walking, and then I stumble, and then I... wake myself up.
Yeah, it's right at the beginning of sleeping or roller skating and you fall and sometimes it's a thing like this.
Roller skating?
Yeah, I have that exact same sensation except that I imagine I'm roller skating and then I suddenly fall and I jerk out of sleep. Look, I grew up in the 80s, you know, I think it just got into my brain somehow.
So did I, but I don't dream about roller skating.
And I was a roller skating waiter for quite a while.
I'm not trying to judge, I was just surprised by it.
Yeah, that's going on in my head. There's a roller rink going on all the time. I just hope that this archdeacon, when he did it, since it was in the middle of services, I hope he went, cat! And then everybody, like, the organ stops. Everybody looks at him.
Oh, gosh.
Stands up to apologize, and then he slips, falls down. The lady at the organ just shakes her head, starts playing again. But there's no mention of that in his journal.
No, there isn't. You know, also with the cat, too. That's a common thing with cats where they're kind of duplicitous. You don't know what you're going to get. Like, they go, oh, I want to be petted. So you pet them.
Yeah.
And then they just turn on you like in a heartbeat.
Sure.
That same, so that it's very visceral. That
next thing you know, your credit card's gone. I know how it is.
But that writing there is very visceral. Like, I know both of those experiences.
Totally.
You know, falling asleep and then jarring awake and then the cat turning on you. So it felt very, very real.
Also falling asleep in church.
Also very real. December 6th. He thinks he's hearing voices. He says that he has no mental health issues in his family, so he's not sure what's up exactly.
He's just in the house alone at night. He hears people talking. And he works late, so he's not so lonely. This is very late at night when he's hearing these things.
January 1st, he goes upstairs at night with only a candle that he's carrying to light the whole place. And he hears a very clear whisper in his ear that says, "Let me wish you a happy new year." And he gets so scared, he dropped the candle, which is kind of creepy, but it's also, you know, kind of nice.
Yeah.
The ghost wants him to have a happy new year.
It's a very pleasant thing for him to say. I mean, we know that he's going to die in February, so it might be ironic, but it's entirely possible the ghost is just being nice.
Yeah.
But any words whispered in your ear, you know, in the middle of the night are going to be terrifying if you're alone.
Of course.
That jacket makes you look thin. Still scary, even though it's really nice to hear. What really sucks about this is he spent his New Year's Eve all alone. It says, "Last night upon my return after midnight from the deanery, I lit my candle to go upstairs," which is sad, even though you know how much I love Dean. Take me to the deanery.
I love Dean.
I love him.
So January 15th, he was going down the stairs and he hears a voice whisper in his ear again, "Take care." Hmm. And he freaks out, grabs the railing, and as he does, this really big house cat slips between his legs, almost tripping him.
That is pretty scary. I mean, he could really get hurt. It's like malevolent.
Yeah.
Cat.
February 27th, Haynes was in his office expecting someone to come when he heard a voice say, "May I come in?" He said, "Sure." Nobody came in. And he was like, "That's strange." He gets up and he looks at the door and nobody's there. And then the guy that he was expecting to show up shows up and he goes, "Were you just here?" And the guy's like, "No, I just got here. You saw me come up the stairs."
There's another part in that section where he writes, "The hall and staircase seem to be unusually full of what I can only call movement without sound. By this, I mean that there seemed to be a continuous going and coming, and that whenever I ceased writing to listen or looked out into the hall, the stillness was absolutely unbroken." Which I like.
Yeah.
There's no noise, but you definitely know things are moving around. There's no way to describe that other than how he did, and I just thought that was a really cool part of the story.
Yeah. That's good. When his sister came back in the spring, his writing seems more upbeat, and the narrator finds a letter. This letter is a guy asking for money?
No.
I read this letter over 3 times, and I did not understand what the heck was going on. It's also written phonetically, or...
Yeah. Well, it's written by an illiterate.
Yes.
It's reproduced exactly as it's written, but it's not a guy, it's Jane Lee, because that's who it's signed by, your obedient servant, Jane Lee. And when you look at it, it says, "I have been expecting to hear of you this last week, and not having done so, must suppose you have not got mine, which was saying how me and my man had met in with bad times this season." So basically, she's saying, "Hey, me and my man, we've got a farm. Things aren't going so well.
Yeah.
I want you to send me £40.
Right.
Then she says, "Otherwise, steps will have to be taken," or "took," is what she says, which I don't want to have happen. "Since you were the means of me losing my place with Dr. Pulteney, I think it's only just what I'm asking, and you know best what I could say if I was put to it. But I don't wish anything of that unpleasant nature, being one that always wishes to have everything pleasant about me." So this is an intimidation letter.
Yeah.
And she's saying, this is the servant that was the silly goose and misplaced the stair rod, which killed the last archdeacon, which is what got Haynes the position.
Right, right, right.
And here she's asking for some money because she apparently thinks... you're the reason that I lost the job.
Yeah.
And there's something about you I could tell folks about. So, okay, obviously what happened is Haynes paid her off to kill the 92-year-old archdeacon, or at least to set up the accident that caused him to stumble down the stairs. And indeed, in this collection of things in the box, there are account books from Haynes. And ever since he's become archdeacon, there has been a quarterly payment to a JL of £25. And here she's asking for £40 over that. And then indeed, there is a payment of £40 to a JL around this time. So clearly he was paying her off to keep quiet.
Yeah. Now, I knew that there's the implication that he was involved in the death and that this whole story is sort of a revenge tale.
Yeah. Or a punishment.
But I was the letter really threw me off. And I don't know why. For some
reason, it's hard to read because it's written so poorly.
And I think that for some reason, I was thinking of when I read Jane, I was thinking of the actor Thomas Jane, who's a man.
Oh, I know he is.
October 22nd, the cat statue seems to be alive for a moment when the choir sings, "Set thou an ungodly man to be ruler over him and let Satan stand at his right hand." He saw the cat on the stairs again in the house, and he's asked around, and there is no kitchen cat.
There is, however, a new employee in the kitchen, Mr. Not a Cat. He's the one in the small overcoat. Seems a bit sensitive about his height, his high-pitched voice. But my, those whiskers are distinguished. Seems like a good chap.
November 15th, he's up again at night, and he sees the cat on the steps.
Right, but he's like sleepwalking.
Right.
It says he fell asleep. This was creepy. It says he fell asleep with the notion that wet lips were whispering into my ear with great rapidity and emphasis for some time together. And then he wakes with a start at the top of the staircase, and the moonlight shows the cat on the step. So had he continued sleepwalking, he may very well have slipped and fallen.
Uh-huh.
Just like that last archdeacon.
Uh-huh.
And then there's a line in his journal where he says, yes, mine is a heavy burden. And after that, some lines are scratched out, but one of them seems to read, acted for the best. So I think he probably was trying to justify
yes,
the murder to himself.
So the narrator can see that Haynes is getting more unnerved and wonders why he isn't taking any time off to rest his nerves, maybe go to the seaside.
Look, when you commit a crime to get a job, you're going to do that job.
The January 7th, Haynes gets his cousin Alan to stay with him for a while. And then again, I got confused.
Mm-hmm. Who'd you think that was?
I was thinking of Barry Allen, The Flash. And I was like, couldn't he just go back in time and fix all this stuff? Just run really fast?
So prior you thought it was Thomas Jane, a human actor from the from modern times, and then you thought it was a fictional character from the DC comic book universe.
Yeah.
Well, I can see that makes sense.
When his cousin stays there for a while, he doesn't hear any whisperings or voices. Everything seemed fine. By January 9th, Alan is like, man, you got a big cat. So it's like, whoa, wait a minute. He's seen the cat?
That's Mr. Not a Cat. I told you he's very sensitive about size issues. No, I don't think the cat is real. I think, but it's extra scary for Haynes to hear that from Alan. Alan also says that it's a very noisy house. Haynes knows that's not the way that things should be. So right. Him putting those things down, I think it just proves that he's not the only one seeing this stuff.
So, but he did see the cat. Well, I mean, the cat's real, as in it's not in his mind, is what I was trying to say.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I'm saying, too. Alan saw the cat. Alan has heard noises in the house.
Right.
So it's not something that Haynes is suffering alone. That's some proof of his of things that are in the house.
So January 11th, Alan leaves, and he writes, I must be firm.
Haynes does, right?
Haynes does, yes. And on the following days, he continues to write that phrase, I must be firm. I guess folks could tell that he was off his rocker a bit, and the obituary says it all.
The morning of the 26th of February was cold and tempestuous. At an early hour, the servants had occasion to go into the front hall of the residence occupied by the lamented subject of these lines. What was their horror upon observing the form of their beloved and respected master lying upon the landing of the principal staircase in an attitude which inspired the gravest fears. Assistance was procured, and a universal consternation was experienced upon the discovery that he had been the object of a brutal and murderous attack. The vertebral column was fractured in more than one place. This might have been the result of a fall. It appeared that the stair carpet was loosened at one point. But, in addition to this, there were injuries inflicted upon the eyes, nose, and mouth, as if by the agency of some savage animal, which, dreadful to relate, rendered those features unrecognizable. The vital spark was, it is needless to add, completely extinct, and had been so, upon the testimony of respectable medical authorities, for several hours. The author or authors of this mysterious outrage are alike buried in mystery, and the most active conjecture has hitherto failed to suggest a solution of the melancholy problem afforded by this appalling occurrence.
Ugh.
Looks like that ghost cat beat the crap out of him.
Well, not just beat the crap, like scratched up his face. They couldn't even tell it was him.
Freddy Krueger'd him, and then he tripped and fell on the loose carpet, and bam.
So the narrator concludes that Dr. Haynes was responsible for Dr. Platini's, the former archdeacon's, death.
And he knows that those figures on the stall were clearly bothering him.
Yeah.
The devil and the cat and death, and that they might have led to whatever was happening with him mentally. He can't substantiate that they were carved out of this hanging oak, though. That's
right.
Just legend as far as he knows.
So the narrator goes to Barchester and tries to find out if any of those woodworks from the cathedral, they're still around. Finds a curator at the local museum who tells him that this old guy found them outside and he took them home.
The curator had gotten some fragments from the cathedral from that local man. And one of the things that man had was a figure that resembles what the narrator is asking about. He's asking about the stall of the archdeacon. The man said that when he found it, the figure, and we don't know which one of them it was, but it broke open and a note fell out. The curator of the museum was interested in it, so the man's like, here, just take it. The curator shows this note to the narrator.
He gave me the card. The paper was quite legibly inscribed in an old hand, and this is what was on it. When I grew in the wood, I was watered with blood. Now in the church I stand. Who that touches me with his hand, if a bloody hand he bear, I counsel him to beware, lest he be fetched away, whether by night or day, but chiefly when the wind blows high, in a night of February. This I dreamt, 26th February, anno 1699. John Austin.
I suppose it is a charm or spell. Wouldn't you call it something of that kind? Said the curator.
Yes, I said. I suppose one might. What became of the figure in which it was concealed?
Oh, I forgot, said he. The old man told me it was so ugly and frightened his children so much that he burnt it.
And that's the end of the story. Again, it doesn't say which of the figures it was that held the note that was so ugly it was burnt, but we know Austin was the man who carved them from earlier journal entries. It's as if the note is actually written by the wood itself. The artist had a vision.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what that presents, because it says watered with the blood. People were killed on it.
Yeah.
And it drank in their blood. It says now it's in the church, so now it's been made into the stall.
Mm-hmm.
If one touches him with a bloody hand, he'll be fetched away probably in February. That's basically what it says. So if you murdered somebody, then you're going to be taken. And the artist dreamt those words and probably those images on the 26th of February, which is the day that Haynes died.
Right.
So that's the big dun-dun-dun, the ghost story. Are you excited and terrified?
No. I did not like the story. It was really hard to read. It really meandered.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about it sounds like it's a cool story, but actually reading it, it was a pain in my butt.
Yeah, I didn't have a great time in the first read through. When I was doing notes, some of the more interesting passages came to light. I'm not looking for plot twists necessarily, but the hand of the weird didn't touch me.
I just felt confused by a lot of it. And then also just tired. And especially, I didn't understand why Barry Allen didn't go back in time ever.
Lovecraft did like it.
He did.
He wrote in supernatural horror and literature. Other notable James tales are The Stalls of Barchester Cathedral, in which a grotesque carving comes curiously to life to avenge the secret and subtle murder of an old dean by his ambitious successor.
I love Dean.
Dr. James, for all his light touch, evokes fright and hideousness in their most shocking forms and will certainly stand as one of the few really creative masters in his darksome province. So Lovecraft, more of a fan than you.
Yeah, he is.
And there is an adaptation of the story, The Stalls of Barchester. They take out the cathedral part.
Yep.
But this is the first of the BBC's Ghost Story for Christmas strand.
It is.
First broadcast on BBC One at 11 p.m. on Christmas Eve, 1971. And I believe you can watch that on YouTube. I didn't get the opportunity to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But I might give it a shot.
Yeah. But, I'm really unmoved by M.R. James. None of his stories have ever worked for me. Whatever it is that he does.
In all honesty, let me ask you something. Have you ever...
Sure.
It doesn't have to be directly either, but have you ever caused the death of a 92-year-old man?
Indirectly or directly?
Doesn't matter. Indirectly or directly, but you definitely, it was, you are the cause.
No.
Yeah, so I think that's all it is. My grandpa was in the shower and, sudsing up, and I just threw some really cold water over the top. Heart attack. I thought it'd be funny. It wasn't funny. But because of that experience, this story was really scary.
Oh, golly. So we're going to take a week off.
We are, you and I, but
yes.
Folks at home will still get a treat. Next week, we're going to release our full reading of The Statement of Randolph Carter.
Yes.
That was sponsored by our Kickstarter backers last year. And that's featuring Andrew Lehman. They've gotten to hear it, but everybody gets to hear it. That's your Christmas present from us. We hope you like it because it is pretty good. Andrew's awesome as always. And then, we'll be back in the new year with more good, weird fiction.
I want to thank Greg for being awesome and talented, and I want everybody to go watch his new YouTube Christmas short of Lunch Dolphin. It's very funny, very enjoyable. Watch it many times.
Yes, we'll link out to it. We'll make sure that you can find it. Please support him because he supports us, and everybody does better when they're well supported, as as the old saying goes.
Have a holly jolly Christmas. Mm-hmm. It's the best time of the year. I don't know if there'll be snow, but have a cup of cheer. Have a holly jolly Christmas. How long can you let me do this?
Keep going.
And when you walk down the street, say hello to friends you know and everyone you meet.
Happy holidays, everybody. We'll be back next year on the H.P. Lovecraft Literary Podcast. We are at hppodcraft.com. I'm Chad Pfeiffer. And playing you out is going to be Chris Lackey, continuing for the next few minutes. See you next year.
In case you didn't hear, oh, by golly, have a holly jolly Christmas this year. Have a holly jolly Christmas. It's the best time of the year. Have a holly jolly Christmas. And when you walk down the street, say hello to friends you know and everyone you meet. Ho, ho, the mistletoe hung where you can see. Somebody waits for you, kiss her once for me. Have a holly jolly Christmas, and in case you didn't hear, oh, by golly, have a holly jolly Christmas this year.